all thou that dwellest on high, and who hast bestowed thy favour so abundantly upon us, do thou grant that our response will ever be one of gratitude, of faith, of love, and of new obedience. And in the fullness of understanding, may we abound in the fruit of the Spirit, in love, joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance, against which there is no law. In Jesus' name, Amen.
Now we're beginning with the subject of imputation, the imputation of sin, as the imputation or adoption of sin. And our study is, to a very large extent, focused in the exposition of Romans 5, 12 through 19. And the first subdivision of that is the syntax, or syntactical construction of the passage.
Do you all have your big testaments today?
Yes.
Let us take them out. Look at them. It is quite obvious that verse 12 in Romans 5:12 is an unfinished comparison. It begins with hosts have, and that always points to comparison. But the comparison isn't completed. Because at the middle of the day, you don't have who first tried, but Kai Hutos.
And Kai Hutos doesn't close a comparison, but carries on the comparison.
And you have even in this chapter examples. Verses 15 18, 19 and 21.
The first part of the comparison is focuses. What follows who goes high is minus. In this verse, you have a process produced by both. And you have that process continued in what follows. But you have no hypothesis corresponding to both F and Kai Buddha. No hypothesis corresponding to these two conjunctions. Now we ask the question, why do you have that kind of sentence? The reason is very obvious. It is characteristic of Paul's style. So in parentheses, so here, after verse 12, you have a parenthesis. And that parenthesis continues until verse 17. And the reason is that the datum expressed intimately in the last clause of verse 12 required the apostle to the required that the apostle explain that particular clause, namely in that all sense. Now it is highly probable that this parenthesis extending from verse 17 to verse 13 through 17 is not one parenthesis but a double parenthesis. And that verses 13 and 14 are directly related to the last clause in verse 12. And verses 15 through 17 directly related to the last clause in verse 14. In the last clause of verse 14, you have a typological deism. Typological deism. Namely that Adam is the type of the one to come. And having stated that typological deism, the apostle was required to develop its implications. Develop the similarities, but also the contrast. He involved in the fact that Adam is the type of Christ. Began with the hypothesis of a certain comparison. He did not at that point provide the hypothesis. Because a parenthesis was necessary in order to expand some of the implications of the focus. In this passage, he does not supply us with the hypothesis of verse 12. In the precise terms which the posters would have required. But at verse 18, he returns to the type of construction which he began in verse 12, and returns to that type of construction, and provides us with a finished comparison. That is, a comparison with both prophecies and hypothesis. That same type of comparison is continued, and that same type of comparison with the same kind of construction is continued in verse 19. So in verse 18 and 19, you have this completed comparison. In the middle of each verse, you have Utos Kai. Utos Kai. That's type of conjunction, that type of construction. That would grow in this compassion. Hence, on the basis of verses 18 and 19, we can conclusively determine what the hypothesis of verse 12 would have been. Paul has not interrupted the
sequence of his thought by inserting this parenthesis, or preferably these parentheses.
Premature at this particular point to say what that
hypothesis would have been if it had been supplied in the exact term of the hypothesis. But nevertheless, I think I discover later on it would be very easy to supply the hypothesis. And it would begin with Udo's car. I so and so through so he would have told me something else.
Now, at first glance, this parenthesis
verse 13 through 17.
Seems very perplexing to us.
It is very odd.
But first of all, when we examine the whole passage, it is this parenthesis that is more significant. For the interpretation of what on all accounts is the pivotal clause in this old passage, at least as far as our present business is concerned. The pivotal clause in this old passage, the last clause in verse 12, as Paul Kant says, a marker. And if we do not rightly understand the reference in that clause, the whole doctrine of the apostle in this passage missed. And not only do we fail to understand the relation of Adam to the race, we also fail to understand the relation of Christ to his redeemed. That is the syntax. Now we come to the second main subdivision of now this is concerned with the sin contemplated in the entitled. The sin contemplated. And this has particular reference to the last clause in verse 12, F O Panther Kmart, in that all sin. In that all sin. F O. Conjunctival expression. It's not a relative expression. Paul doesn't say N-whole fantasy marker in whom all sin, which he could very well have used if
that what his precise thought. But there, all cancer came on to him. And F.O. has the force of the conjunction. And then, in that, if you would expand it, it would be epic, too tall, party. Upon this, that. Epic, too tall, party. Upon this, that. And that expansion would mean on the ground of the fact that, on the ground of the fact that the abridged expression at all simply means in that, doesn't have the force of our conjunction because. Now there is no need to try to demonstrate that significance of F.O. because there is practically unanimous agreement among entities of present time, a long time also, to that effect. It is happily proven, as a matter of course teaching, that all sin is all sin in Adam. And consequently, when the clause in whom all sin is of itself correct, but that is not the precise thought of the apostle here. Very deliberately use this causal conjunction. Causal conjunction. Because it gives the reason why death penetrated to all men. Later on in this passage, he will make clear that it is the reason also why condemnation passed upon all men. And also why it can be said that all sinned in a single act. In that all sin was because that all sin on the ground of the fact that all sin. So what does this matter came out on with this?
As a matter of form,
actual sins of all men. Before this, the actual sins of all men, there is no other expression that would have been more suitable. I say we actually meant the actual sins of all men. No other expression would have been more suitable to express that thought than Tante Sivata. But the question is not to be determined by grammatical possibility, but by contextual considerations. So we have to deal with the various views that have been propounded respecting this particular thought, and old fantasy. And you first of all have, out of these ones, you have the Pelagian emotion. Oh, that was the view propounded by Pelagius himself. And his view was that this refers to the actual sins of all men. And so the verse leans on that supposition that as Adam sinned and therefore died, so in like manner all men sin and they likewise die. A quick parallel between Adam and all men. And Adam is simply the prototype after whose pattern all other men die. They follow his example, and therefore they die. Now, this is not the 4th century or 5th century doctrine. It was 4th and 5th century doctrine. But, regrettably, it's not confined to 4th century or 5th century thinking. The current exegesis of this clause is after the Pelagian pattern. Now, it never entered into Pelagius' mind. That Genesis 2 and 3 were mythical. Or that they were legendary. He believed in the historical Adam according to the canonical account. But today, in the dialectic way of thinking, on the assumption
that. And the three is just mythical, and it will be a mythical or legendary. Adam is regarded simply as the typical man. Adam may never have existed. He may never have existed. But Genesis 2 and 3 describe. But Adam is every man. He's all of them. We all have him. And Adam in that sense, he has to be good. He's simply the typical man. And on that basis, Romans 5:12b is interpreted as referring to the sins that all men commit. And also, the dialectic theology that on an entirely different biblical theological view, or an entirely different biblical theological perspective, nevertheless, exegetically it belongs to the category of the Pelagian exegesis. Well, we all have it. And that is what is expressed in their whole fantasy. So you see, we are dealing not with this from the standpoint of historical theology, but we are also dealing with this from the standpoint of a crucial interest. That's the present time. Well, the Pelagian exegesis is that therefore punish him are gone reserved to the sins of all men. Is that you can? Now it has sometimes been thought, and I find my students again and again falling into that error. The syntax of verse 12 cannot be pleaded as a refutation of the Pelagian view. Cannot be pleaded as a refutation of the Pelagian view. Pelagius himself is fully aware of the construction of verse of Romans 5:12 and the Latin text with which he was dealing. The Latin text with which he was dealing was, in this respect, offering of the Greek text. The syntax is not a refutation. Because of so, verse 12 is not a finished comparison. It's not a finished comparison. Nevertheless, there is in it a subordinate comparison or a coordinate comparison. And if the Pelagian view were correct, all could still have written verse 12 precisely as he did write it. Because in that instance, the comparison intimated in hupo, the comparison intimated in the second part, beginning with kai hupo, would be a comparison between the entrance of sin and death and the passing on of sin and death.
That is what Pelagius intends.
That of sin and death entered through one man, both sin and death continue through the sins of all men, through the sin of all men. On either grammar of Pantheon Demarthon, nor the sentence of the past, refute the Pelagian ethic, and refute it on the basis of grammar of sentence. But nevertheless, there are actual, exegetical, and theological objections to this Pelagian exegesis. Can be refuted on proof on the basis of actual, exegetical, and theological objections. No presentation of that. Four case Romans 1, 2, 3, and 4. It is not factually true. Not factually true. Not all die because they actually sin. Infants die, but they have not transgressed after the similitude of Adam's. That is to say, they have not personally and voluntarily transgressed the commandment of God. The reason being that they are not psychologically capable. They may die immediately after emergence from the mother's womb. Or they may die in the mother's womb. But they suffer death. You see, in verse 14, as we shall notice in a moment, all speaks of sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. Sinning after the similitude of Adam's transgression. The Pelagian exegesis is that all sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. The dialectic, Carson Grumman, the dialectic theology says the very same thing. Let all men sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression. But what about this? So there is an insuperable objection from the standpoint of empirical fact. Now, second, there is now the first exegetical argument. That is, verses 13 and 14 follow the very opposite of the Pelagian exegesis.
How did he say? Death reigned over those who did not sin. That's what this analogy of that
did not sin after the similitude of Adam's transgression.
Now it's not our concern now to determine the denotation. To determine the denotation of those who all had in view.
That's not our reason. The question is the explicit statement that death reigned over certain persons who did not sin after the pattern of Adam's transgression. Now this very directly upon the Pelagian exegesis. The Pelagian exegesis says the very opposite of what Paul says. And Paul says the very opposite of what the Pelagian exegesis says. Namely, that death reigned over certain persons who were in an entirely different category from that of Adam. Entirely different. If by that we did not, after the similitude of Adam's transgression.
No, third. The most conclusive recitation is again an exegetical one. Namely, that Paul says the very opposite of the Pelagian exegesis. So repeatedly in this passage, he says the very opposite of repeatedly. He says that condemnation and death reigned over all men by reason of the one sin of the one man, Adam. Condemnation and death of all
is the one friend of the one man, Adam. If he says that, he could not have used language more plainly in refutation of the Pelagian exegesis. That is exactly what Paul does. And he says it on five successive occasions in this passage. Five times in the parenthesis from verses 15 to 6. No, five times in the verses 15 to 19. Now remember that verses 15 through 17 are part of the parenthesis. Part of the parenthesis that is intended to explicate for us what he had said in verse 12. And verses 18 and 19 are the recapitulation of what he would have said in verse 12 if he had closed the compass. So you see how relevant are the statements in verses 15 through 19 to the precise question at issue.